Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 225, featuring Robert Christoph of the Victory Dojo and New Voices Academy in Burbank, California. I'll get to Robert in a second because I want to tell you guys that I am actually recording the podcast intro right here from sunny Sofia in Bulgaria. We just wrapped up Total Chaos, which was a total success. It was a really awesome event. We had incredible speakers, great response, close to 1,000 people, if not more. And I think the speakers had an amazing time, as did all the attendees. And I got to tell you, although I am exhausted, I am very, very happy that we had this event. I recorded 6 podcasts while I was here, which is pretty good for an event. So very happy to do that. Anyway, on to Robert. Robert is a really interesting person. I have known him for a bit of time. He is actually my kid's teacher, their karate teacher. And as I got to know him a little bit more, I realized he has a fascinating story and a fascinating past. I'm really interested in the fact that he's sort of gotten into doing a lot of stuff with kids, not just karate. He does things like teaches them a very Mr. Miyagi approach. He teaches them how to treat bonsais and how to do different things, and he makes them clean the dojo by hand and all those incredible things that really make kids a strong people. And what's amazing throughout that process is that the kids really want to be there. They are so excited. But what's also interesting about him is that he's actually also an actor and an acting coach and teaches and does all kinds of stuff. And he decided to combine his two skills in the dojo this summer and start something new called the New Voices Academy, which is going to be a filmmaking class for teens and right around that 11 to 14-year-old age. And he's going to let them learn all the process of filmmaking from some real professionals, people that are working for Marvel Studios, Nickelodeon, Disney, et cetera. And they're all going to come in and give some guidance to these kids about what to do to actually make a film work, how to write dialogue, how to edit, how to break up things, how to do special effects, and actually how to do visual effects is something else that he'd like to get involved with, which is what this podcast is slightly involving. If you guys out there say, hey, you know what? I'd like to help some kids with a little bit of visual effects here and there, just little really, 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 really small things, it would make a big difference. It would make these kids so happy to see their film look so special. Anyway, hopefully you guys will enjoy this great podcast with Robert Christoph and that you will be able to help us out and see what kind of stuff you can do. And if you're interested in learning more about the New Voices Academy, go check it out on their website, newvoicesacademy.com. All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Thanks for making it over to the west side and doing some getting lunch. But I think, you know, when I was talking to you, I said you really should come on. You've got such an interesting backstory that led you to do all the things that we're going to talk about when we get there. But let's start with that. Let's talk with that backstory and how you. I mean, there's two things that I know about you: karate and acting, and the two very big things. Right, so, how did those things come together or work in parallel or whatever?
You know, I grew up in a neighborhood in the early '70s that was right. My house was right on the train tracks between an all-white neighborhood and an all-black neighborhood. And I was multi-ethnic, mixed race,
right.
And I caught hell. Right. If I went two blocks one way, I was, you know, I was just in trouble either, right. In either direction. My father thought it would be a good idea for me to learn how to take care of myself, so he enrolled me in a karate class.
Okay.
And I, you know, happily never really had to use it. You know, right. As soon as I started taking karate, a lot of those problems just kind of went away, and not because I was, you know, Chuck Norris or, you know, Michael Jai White or anything, you know, right. doing the karate chop thing,
right.
Just because I think my mindset kind of changed.
Okay.
The martial arts mindset. So I stuck with it. and got my, you know, did that through my teen years.
Yeah.
And right about the time I was ready to get my black belt, I went to a play, a school play, and okay. I saw my sister was already acting.
Okay.
You know, in the theater world of this small town.
Right.
And I went to this play, and I got the bug, and I joined the, you know, the high school group and
right.
started acting, and then I started directing the shows later on, and then I went back when I was in college and directed the high school shows, and then I wound up majoring and went into a BFA program at Wayne State University.
Right.
And I didn't have a lot of money in college, but I had this skill, and I could teach classes. So while I'm at Wayne State University, I start teaching karate classes for the extended program that, you know, goes to the community.
Okay.
So I had a student ID and I had a faculty ID
at the same time.
It was great. Yeah. You know? And then, you know, so karate, martial arts has just always kind of been there in the background.
Mm-hmm.
While I studied and went on and graduated and, you know, had a career in the classical theater.
Classical theater.
Shakespeare, Moliere, you name it. You know, all the classics. I worked in Philadelphia for about 17 years.
Okay.
And quiet as it's kept, Philadelphia has about 22 equity houses. So okay. It's bigger than the off-Broadway circuit. So
okay.
You can work all year round.
Right.
And in equity houses. So I did that and just always studied either Aikido or Jiu-Jitsu. And oddly enough, the two things never really melded together. Like I never did a show where
so
I was
you had
doing
your,
karate.
You had your karate side and you had your acting side.
Right.
Two separate things.
Right.
Yeah.
And now I have this this business that's right. a karate business in Burbank.
Yeah.
And I teach filmmaking as well, and acting and directing.
Yeah, but I mean, I still think it's amazing that you went through all of these different stories. You know, you were acting for a long time, right? And
yes.
you were teaching for a long time,
right? Yes.
And teaching is, you know, that's something that. Well, let's talk about teaching. Like, how is it that what did you have you learned through the years about teaching? Because you're a very good teacher.
I never wanted to be a teacher, but there were always lulls, and my mom was really smart. She said, you know, you need a backup, you know, when you can't get a job as an actor or a director, you know, you need a backup, a fallback.
Right.
I taught, like I said, I taught karate in college,
right.
And it was just once I got out of school, it was a kind of a natural progression to start teaching acting. And I had worked with young people for years.
Right.
I got involved with Arts and Education, the Pennsylvania Council of the Arts. I just started working with young people. And what I found was I was a horrible teacher in the beginning. I yelled, I screamed, I sit down, shut up, and listen to me. I'm trying to
teach you something, right, yeah.
And at some point, I think I just kind of threw my hands up one day mm-hmm. and kind of said, well, here's the project. Here's the idea. You guys do it. You guys show me something.
Right.
And I was amazed. At what placing simple dynamics and a few rules in front of a young person
mm-hmm.
Can do, and then trusting them to explore it and produce something.
Right.
At that moment, I think I've been fulfilled by teaching ever since because of project-based learning and just empowering young people,
right?
The way that people did for me when I was a teenager.
Yeah, I think when you look back at what you have, you know, how when you're in a role that you're trying to teach someone, you always look back to the people that taught you best,
right?
Because that, and then you follow their philosophy, right?
Yes.
And so that is also a very important thing. And I've had I always had, like, I always liked the toughest teachers for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, the ones that were like, everyone's like, oh, he's really tough. It's like, yeah, that's why I like him or her, you know?
Yeah.
And because they're the ones that somehow have something to say a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's probably true, you know? I think we all really do want structure.
Yes.
And we want to be pushed.
Yeah.
And we want somebody to stand over us and say, hey, look, I expect the best from you.
Right.
And I know you can do it, but I'm not going to mess around here
right.
if you're not.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to, I don't want to say a right. bad word here, but I'm not going to mess around.
Right.
And I think we all really need that.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think that, you know, I look at, that's the thing, right? So a lot of people, you know, people who are in the audience who listen to this, a lot of them are starting to have kids, starting to go through that and trying to figure this out, especially the people I know that are like my age in the industry. They had to teach themselves a lot of the tools that are going on right now.
Yeah, sure.
So teaching yourself and understanding how that works is an interesting part of it. But when you're having kids and you're starting to see the interest that your kids have, and some of the kids, it's interesting. A lot of the people I know, the kids are like, I want to do what you do. I want to do computer graphics, whatever. My kids have absolutely no interest in this whatsoever. None. What's funny is that, like, my daughter now, her two passions are the same things as yours, acting, drama, and karate. That's it. That's what she cares about.
Too. she's good at both of them, I'll tell you.
So she's very interested in that, and that's the thing. But I think that one of the things that's important is that you are also, as a teacher to kids, is you're teaching them, you're not just teaching them karate, you're teaching them a mindset, and you're teaching them confidence, and you're teaching them adult lessons.
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
that you'd say it that way. Because, you know, I catch myself saying this too, you know, I'm not just teaching karate. Actually, you know, I'm from the Mr. Miyagi world
okay.
of karate.
All right.
You know, Mr. Miyagi in the first Karate Kid really did have it right.
Okay.
He really did have it right. It's, you know, tournaments and things like that are wonderful. They're wonderful testing grounds. They're wonderful proving grounds for any kid who's studying martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe that it can't be the center. That's just karate.
Right.
But real karate, real martial arts, is really learning discipline, acceptance, tolerance, being a seeker, being a questioner, and being a critical thinker.
Right.
Those are really the real attributes that we're really trying to instill. And the way we do it is by doing really simple things over and over and over until they're perfected.
Right.
And that simple process takes every human being, every that studies martial arts, takes you through, elation, you feel cool, you've got the uniform, and then about 4 weeks after that, your muscles are sore, and you're really starting to get bored, and you have to stick with it and move through that. And all of those things are, you know, real life lessons, you know, that whole process. And then we deal
with that in computer graphics all the time.
Everybody deals with it. Everybody deals with it in every career in the world. You know, you start out with passion and love, and then it turns into work. And then you get a reward, and you're inspired, and then you start the process all over again.
Right.
Again, you know.
But you teach it also, like, for example, you have a karate class, obviously, but you also have a bonsai class, right?
Yes.
And the bonsai class, you can say, I'm doing the same thing, except instead of learning a kata, I'm learning specific treatments of how I treat that plant. You know?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Precision and choice making.
Right.
Being able to look forward and see where a growth trend will happen and how to clip it. And, you know, clipping and pruning a bonsai tree is very much like clipping and pruning and training a child.
Right.
You know, it's what parents are doing all the time. You see a tendency.
Right.
You know, the parent who has wisdom and foresight and has done that before looks and goes, that tendency isn't going to lead us to where we want to be. So I'm going to clip that right off.
You know?
Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's really established itself. And you might have to go through some dramatic, pruning practices.
Yep. But, Yeah. But that's really good. And then, I mean, I also, the other thing that I think is very interesting that you do a lot in the dojo is you break down gender roles in a really interesting way. What you're not doing is you're not necessarily saying boys are the same as girls.
No.
Because a lot of people say that. Like boys and girls should be, there's like, these are two different people, and certain men have strengths that women don't, and vice versa.
Right. But then even in same sex has differences.
Right.
The differences are what you don't focus on. What you focus on is the bar. The bar remains the same.
Right.
And that's where we start to approach true equality. It's when we put the bar at a place and everybody has to make that bar. They have to jump over that bar. Male, female, whatever orientation you decide you are, that's not what the point is. The point is not the difference. The point is the achievement of the task.
Okay.
And, you know, if you simply do that, you kind of escape the small stuff. And I feel like, you know, we're all really focused on our differences instead of focusing on, you know, the bars.
Right.
You know, what are the values here? What are, you know, where do we have to jump? What do you have to learn to be able to get there? How hard do you have to exercise to be able to get to this place?
Right.
And, you know, what's amazing, I think, is that when you don't focus on the differences, you find that... you know, girls are pretty strong individuals. And of course, you know, we knew that every, you know, they're the strongest. Females are the across the country, across the all the genuses in the world are some of the, you know, most.
Yeah.
You know, they rear the children.
They have to bear children. That's
they do the hunting. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's a really strong sex. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that's kind of what I do, is just kind of take that away. And I can thank my wife for that. My wife has really trained me in not falling into the labels and the stereotypes. And
I think it's really good, and I think it really helps. And obviously, you know, the thing is there's a lot of teenage girls that are in the dojo that are all black belts. Each, you know, 14-year-old girls could kick my ass.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been teaching them for 5 years, and let me tell you, it's no fun.
Yeah.
It's no fun fighting them.
They are tough. And sometimes you see them fighting and you're like, whoa, take it down a notch.
Yeah. And I have to. Yeah. I have to. In fact, I've even had to have a conversation with a few of the students I have who are young women who, you know, I've had to have the conversation that I've had with boys for years. And that's like, hey, you need to be careful here about how strong you are and what you know. You got to quiet it down. You got to keep it to yourself. And you're not a cowgirl.
Right.
You know, you can't go out there and go whipping the world, you know, and having a chip on your shoulder.
Isn't it interesting that you're having a conversation with a girl about this, which you would assume it's a teenage boy who's just going to take his karate skills and go beat people up.
Right. And I have a girl who's really good at it.
Yeah.
She's been beating up boys and girls and everybody since she was 11. And
she's scary.
Right. I've been blessed. Blessed.
Well, I think what you've done is a really great thing.
Well, thank you.
And I really love the dojo. We've been there for a couple of years now, and it's been our normal Saturday routine to go there up and down the hill constantly, because Lily's teaching now and she's doing all this stuff, and she's being a part of it. But you're taking now what you're going to be doing, and what I really want to get to is talk a little bit about this film camp that you're doing, because you're taking your acting and your passion and your knowledge of filmmaking and using that same philosophy to do a film camp in the dojo for the summer, right?
Yeah. Actually, not even just the summer. It'll actually be an ongoing program.
Oh.
You know, I have about 20 or 30 hours a week at this studio, the Victory Dojo, and it's unused time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I ran arts and education programs, you know, all over the country for years. And I just said, you know, I think I'll go back and pick this up, you know, and try to see if I can fill this time.
Right.
With this, with a program like this, it's a program that my wife and I had done for years all over the country. And it was very successful. It started at a time when media literacy was, back in 2006, 2004, media literacy was just hitting the schools.
Right.
And teachers didn't have the skills. They didn't have skills to pick up a digital camera and make a movie and,
right.
Put it on the computer and edit it and
right.
whatnot. Now that now schools don't hire yeah. Outside people to do that because everybody could do it. You can do it on your phone.
Yeah. I think Soderbergh just did a film on his phone.
Yeah. I want to do one.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll be a cool project that we'll do at the film camp.
Yeah.
But the film camp is, it's going to be an ongoing project. It'll be, tiered very much like our karate program. You'll enter, you'll have one level where you'll be involved with film, with making a film. You may have some input in writing. You'll primarily be an actor. You'll do support crew kinds of stuff, but you won't be a director. You'll just basically be kind of an apprentice who gets to act in the
film. What is your target age for these kids?
11 to 14 is what we're going to go for. We're going to go for the
young teens.
The young teen and pre-teen.
Right.
Which is really, right now, I think teens in America really starts at about
11
and a half.
Yeah,
so we'll do that, and then once you get through that part of the program, you'll go on and maybe.
So why did you pick that age, by the way?
Oh, I picked it because I when I look around at filmmaking programs and film camps, I see a lot of stuff for teenagers. There's a ton of stuff, of course, for college age. Younger children. Don't do quite so well with the collaborative aspect of filmmaking. It's a little too technical. So
attention spans.
Right. But the 11-year-old, the 10, 11, 12-year-old, it's the golden age, I feel like, of childhood.
Okay.
It's the end of childhood. They're really hungry to be teenagers.
Yeah.
So, they're really trying to prove themselves.
They're trying desperately to say, I am independent.
I am, right. They're individualizing. So it just seemed like a natural fit. And most of the kids that I teach are in that age group.
Yeah, so you're really familiar with that age group.
Yeah.
So, it's like, I know what we can accomplish with this group.
It's the pre-middle school age.
But what do you think about their creative skills at that age as well?
I really believe that it's probably one of the most creative times for a child. You have one foot in childhood, one foot in adulthood. You're not you don't quite have the problems or the pressures of a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not too cool for school.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Right.
And you still have that wonder.
Right.
Still have that awe and that reverence, for, just everything.
Right.
So it's a great, great creative age.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that you're picking that age at that time to do that kind of stuff.
Right. And kids now, they want to, stories, there's so much out there, social media is in itself a kind of, storytelling, a personal narrative. Everybody's working on their own personal narrative,
right.
Instagram, Snapchat,
Facebook, etc.
Right. Now most of them can't really, I think 11-year-old is too young, 11 years of age is a little too young for those kinds of things.
Sure.
But being able to have that outlet to be able to do a personal narrative or to explore that kind of storytelling in a safe way, I think it's just a natural fit. It's a really cool thing. I think the kids, they eat it up. They love it.
Yeah. I think that's a really good idea because I think they're looking at these kids are going to, first of all, a lot of them, they're not on social media. So this is an outlet for them to be able to tell their story in some way in a creative thing. And I think that while they are not on social media, they do watch a ton of YouTube.
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, they
so
do. And they're influenced.
And they're influenced by YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So these kids, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a young kid, age 9 or whatever, when I grow up, I want to be a YouTube influencer. Like, literally, that's what they're saying, yeah. right? Yeah. Which is a little bit of a sad statement.
Yeah, it is. And it's it can be a little scary. I mean, inherently, you know, I mean, go for it. Because, I mean, you know, some of these influencers are making $20,000 and $30,000, $40,000, you know.
A month, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's a college education right there, you know.
Right.
How I do kind of feel like the downside is, and this is why I think the programs like the one that we're doing here at Victory Dojo is really important. Teaching filmmaking, but also teaching media literacy and really teaching kids that, you know, the idea that every single thing that you see is from someone's point of view.
Yes.
And you have to be able to decipher the language and the vocabulary of the media content to be able to read what is that point of view? What is being sold to you?
Right.
Why are they making this particular piece of media? And who is it aimed at? And being able to give that kind of empowerment to an 11-year-old is setting them up for a kind of success and a kind of escape from a lot of the stuff that we're terrified of.
Right.
When, with a young person encountering the internet.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and all of the things in that garden.
The thing is that there's a lot of people doing really stupid things and then putting them up on YouTube, yeah. and they're like, well, I'm going to try to do a really stupid thing and put it on the internet. But instead we're going to just like, wait, what if I did something really good and
right
put
on.
That on the internet?
Right.
You know?
Right. And create that fire.
Yeah.
There we go. That's the hope.
Right.
That's the hope.
So kids
are always going to do stupid things. I mean,
sure.
And so are adults. I mean, most of the adults I know, will do stupid things from
sure.
time to time.
But I think that's a really good idea, because then now all of a sudden they're going to see that I can still make stuff. It just can be interesting and fun. And now I'm going to learn how to do it properly too.
Right.
That's the other thing.
Right. And then there's also the added benefit of simply being able to tell your own story or to make up a story,
mm-hmm.
Express yourself in that way. I think it's deeply powerful.
Right.
You know, filmmaking is, I believe, the most powerful medium on the planet.
Right now, yes, yeah. for sure.
And, you know, being able to put that tool in a child's hands and make sure that, you know, they understand that, you know, it's very powerful mm-hmm. and very powerful things. Great, you know, come with great responsibility.
Right.
And that you can really affect other people, mm-hmm. You know, positively or negatively.
Or negatively, yeah.
You know, it's a great thing.
Yeah. But I think, so you're breaking up the, you know, some of the things in terms of like they're literally to come in. Are you mentioned before you're going to do like a give them something to start with, but they're going to be responsible for writing, right?
Right. Well, there's this summer's project, we've decided to look at the most forbidden thing that a preteen can see,
okay.
can experience, and that is the PG-13 movie. You're okay. not 13, you can't see it.
Right.
So we're going to use horror. Right.
right.
Now the horror is going to be kid-friendly horror.
Right.
Right. Usually things that turn. There'll be a turn. For instance, we have a trailer up. You know. And
right.
It really starts out like a horror movie.
Yeah.
In fact, your daughter's in it.
Yep.
And
my son's in it too.
Yeah, and she's the culprit. Right.
Yeah.
You know? But it gets turned on her. You know, mm-hmm. she's playing a joke on her mom, and it looks like a horror movie, and we're all horrified, and it looks
right.
like she's in a lot of trouble, and then she scares her mom, and then her mom turns around and gets her back, you
right.
know, even better and
right.
more simpler, you know, more, right. more simply.
Right.
And so there are those kinds of stories in that they are kid friendly. So I don't want to terrify the moms out there that we're doing horror movies, but the fact that we just say, hey, we're going to do something that's kind of scary, mm-hmm. kind of taboo for the preteen, creates a lot of energy. It creates a lot of, desire and interest.
Right.
So what we'll do is we have about six different frameworks of stories. So we give them a framework. For instance, We may say, the name of this story is El Amigo de la Muerte, the friend of death. And it's going to be about a child, a kid, who maybe is not alive anymore. And they didn't have any friends when they were alive. And so they've come back to make friends. The only problem is that they want to keep their friend and they might want to take them
back with them
right. to the, wherever, the land of the dead or whatever.
Right.
All right, so there's your concept. And then we'll have maybe somebody from, well, we will have somebody from Marvel Films or we have a couple of, we have a great playwright, John Dorff, coming in. He works a lot with the Writer's Store. And they will work specifically with, you know, how to write dialogue, how to explore the issue or the story.
Right.
And structure it. And so the story has a focus. The kids have a kind of a framework to build on. The writers will then, the kids in the writing camp will write three shorts this way. And then they'll pass that on to the acting and the directing camps, which start after that.
Okay.
Those projects are then, the acting camp will take them, cast the roles, create teams that will are going to be production teams for that.
But you have specific people that are coming in as consultants slash teachers for every part of it.
Yes.
So they're experts and they're teaching.
Right, right. So we have directors coming in. We have producers coming in.
Right.
We have workshops from people from CBS, NBC, Netflix. It's really cool.
You got a lot of people. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. So how did you get all these people?
Is this I just, we had friends. I'm in Burbank. I've been there for 10 years.
Right.
Martial arts. I get a lot of people from Nickelodeon, Disney. A lot of people. I knew, personally in my own, for my own acting days and my own filmmaking days, I have friends, who, continued on. And, when I said, hey, I'm going to do this film camp and, here's my idea.
Right.
I'm really surprised that people were just would fall over and just kind of say, oh, hey, man, I want to be part of that.
Right.
I'll come in. I would love to talk to the kids, about it. I would love to help. Develop a new voice.
Sure.
So it's been really exciting. I mean, we're really jazzed about it.
Yeah. So that's awesome. But there's obviously, you're going to have, figure out lighting, understanding lighting, how to behave on set. That's another thing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All of it. All of it. Basically set behavior.
Which is a big social skill, actually.
Right, and one that I wish they had taught me in college, because I didn't learn those things.
Right.
Well, I'm sure they're teaching them now in school, but we didn't learn those kinds of nuts and bolts,
right?
Stuff, it's also really cool to have kids work with or rub shoulders with people who are professionals. The Writers' Week is run like a real writers' room.
Okay.
And it's, it's fascinating. We have...
which I don't think kids are going to, that's not common to them. It's going to be a completely different experience of writing. Because they're used to sitting down, write an essay. I'm writing an essay.
Right, right. We had a story editor from Kickin' It, from Disney's Kickin' It. He was the head story editor. And he came in and he ran a writer's group. For a week. And it was so much fun. I mean, I had adults.
Right.
Some of the parents, who were, writers who were, still learning their craft or still, trying to break in, were going, you should do this for adults. It was a wonderful experience, and you learn how to collaborate, how to bring forth an idea, how to share the idea, how to criticize, collaboration is very difficult.
Yes.
There are a lot of rules to the interplay of, how do we compare ideas and how do we choose the best idea and
right.
and how do we not feel like, I just got cheated because my idea.
Right.
It's and there are some really clear, very clear rules to proceed in that way. And,
interesting.
And they work. I can't say enough about it. I just think it's really valuable.
And then obviously you're going to have to deal with editing and post-production right. stuff.
Now, that camp will come. That's not going to be part of this year.
Right.
It's because it's its own camp. Mm-hmm. You know, ideally, if we get this up and running this year and we continue it throughout the year, next summer, what we'll do is we'll actually do a longer writer's camp, a longer acting camp, mm-hmm. A production camp, and then a post-production camp.
Right.
Where, you know, you'll have people, the kids who want to learn how to edit.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lots of editing friends. One of them's, you know, sitting across the table from me right now. So yeah. I have a great opportunity for you next year, Chris. Yeah.
Thank you, Albert. Well, the thing is, I think that what I'd like, you know, people to know about in this is like, hey, you know, this is something that's a great idea, a great to sort of pass on this knowledge to kids. There's so many different things that people can do with it. But also, you know, you may need help in this area.
Right? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right? Yeah, anybody who's out there who would like to lend a hand, or if you're a professional and you want to help, please contact us at
right.
newvoicesacademy.com. Or,
okay.
You know, just look me up on the internet. Call me up, please.
Because there's obviously, you know, there's so many things where, I'll just put it this way, right? There are people out there that could solve the Daenerys and the Starbucks cup situation right. that happened, right?
Right, right.
Like that,
right.
That is like, oh, how are we going to deal with that? It's like, that's like a 5-minute problem
was
we can
solve. Really, was she really, so there was a Starbucks coffee cup right on the table. Right on the table.
There's a mug of beer that's the prop. Uh-huh. And then a Starbucks cup right next to it.
Oh my gosh, man. So we have, yeah, so we have people who can solve that.
Solve that. Right, that's on. An easy solve, right? Right. In fact, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you know this story or not. Okay, the original Lost, the series. So J.J. Abrams is actually pretty technically savvy, and he knows how to use 3D applications and stuff.
Right.
So he designed himself the Lost logo. He did it himself. That's been on the show. And it's pretty good. You know, it's got that loss and it fades and gets out of focus, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's all kinds of technical problems with it that to 3D artists out there just drive them nuts. So a lot of people went out and they've recreated like the most perfect 4K version. It's like, just can you please just use this one instead? Like, there's no aliasing problems. Right. There's none of this right. other stuff. And he refused. He's like, nope, I'm still using mine. There are people out there that can help on some of these things.
I would love it, man. I tell you, if there's anybody out there who can make a Land of the Dead for us, because, you know, we've got...
Well, it's just a lot of things, right? I mean, the thing is that I think that the kids can learn is like, okay, I may not be able to have the skill set yet to, let's say do a really good color treatment on something, right? Mm-hmm. But they can see how the color treatment changed it and how much better it looks with the new color treatment, or how it changes the mood of it with the color treatment.
Right.
So if there's people who want to volunteer to say, hey, you know what, I'd love to be involved in this camp and see what I can do to help. You know, maybe you need a couple of small effects, or maybe you need a little bit of compositing, or
right.
some kind of editorial trick or something.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm sure we'll need all of that and right. more. You know, we've got really a great group of core instructors. Robert Leroy is running our directing camp. Robert is his latest project just got released on Amazon. It's Noah's Park. It's a brilliant award. It's winning awards. It's a
right.
It's a basically faith-based children's stories.
Okay.
Kind of in the vein of you remember Davy and Goliath?
Sure.
Only 20,000 times better.
Okay.
And it's just a visual masterpiece. It's just enchanting. It's for really little children, but it's a wonderful piece.
Right.
And Robert is like Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
He had a studio
yeah.
Over in Burbank. I used yeah. to go to it all the time. In fact, he let me shoot Cube Girl, one of my episodes, on his set right before they tore it down because he was done.
Right.
But I mean, so we have him doing the directing camp. Robert's, you know, had projects in the Museum of Modern Art.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he's won awards everywhere mm-hmm. for different projects. We have Al Gomez running the production camp, or the behind the scenes camp. So Al Gomez is a kind of the Harvey Korman of the modern Harvey, you know, Harvey Korman. Uh-huh. You know, his latest piece was Monsters in the Woods. So he's really big on horror movies. B horror movies. You know that whole genre. And then I'm doing the acting coaching and the support acting for all of the projects. So I'm doing the acting camp. You know, these guys have been making films. And one of the things we do want to impart with the kids who take the camp is that you don't need $1 million effects and you don't need a ton of stuff to make a compelling science fiction piece.
Right. In fact, what I think is interesting is when you get all those restrictions, you come up with really creative ideas.
Exactly. And sometimes, sometimes it'll even be better. Necessity is the mother of creation. So it's being able to solve your story problems, with live action. Is sometimes, a really interesting challenge and can teach, I think, all filmmakers a lot.
Yeah. There is some really great ways to solve problems. I mean, in fact, it's funny you say this because I worked in visual effects where it was like, in certain cases, like money was no object, right? They're just going to throw a bunch of money to make, hire a team. Well, it is and it isn't, right?
Right.
Because I'm just basically going to sit here and work on this. I've had shots that I've worked on for 3 months, one shot. It's a little too much sometimes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's really, it's really cool when you come up with really creative ideas.
Right. That's Tron the light fight, right?
Right.
That's very rewarding, though. When you told me about that, I went, oh my God. Bow.
Yeah. The Tron thing was working on Tron was a lot of fun, but. Also, some of the guys who listen to this know when we did the V-Ray IRL video, which some of you are familiar with, and there's a big car crash that happened in there. You cannot – it is so simple to do that, and it looked like
– It looked great, and I couldn't believe it when you told me how you did it.
Yeah, it's so simple. It looked like a massive car crash.
It did. I that was.
And all of that was just the editor, the director, and then the editor taking the elements and making it work.
Right.
And really, all we did, just to explain what it is, there's a big car crash that we did, and it's a lot of fast shots, and it looks like we took a Jeep and slammed into a telephone pole.
It looks like you spent $60,000-$70,000 and you wrecked a Jeep.
Right.
I was like, how did you wreck the Jeep, man? How did you do that?
If you really look at it, you never see a wrecked Jeep.
No, but you do in your mind of the collision, how you guys did the collision. It was awesome.
So all we did is we decided, to work on it is we filmed everything in reverse. So what we did is we had the Jeep up against the pole, slowly pulled it away from the pole, and then in editing, all we do is we reverse it and speed it up, and it goes bam, and it just goes right into the pole. And then for the inside, the acting was we look like we're crashed, and we reverse act in slow motion. We're hitting something.
Yeah. See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's almost more rewarding sometimes when you figure those kinds of things out.
And I can imagine like a kid when they're like, how we get, no, you're not actually going to crash a Jeep in it. We're going to do something really creative. And when they see this, they see the execution of that, that's so rewarding.
Right. And you begin to understand how powerful and how interesting it is to create this illusion.
Right.
And that there are a lot of ways to skin that cat, if you've got any filmmaker blood in you, you just start to
get
goosebumps around of thing. You go, wow, that was really smart. That was really smart. He saved a lot of money. Wow, that's really cool.
There's so many things. Well, actually, the other thing.
I want to do that.
The other thing about, just pragmatically, obviously, I think having that preteen kid just getting ready to, like you said, trying to be as an adult as possible or do things that adults do, meaning making a horror film,
yeah,
right? That's exciting because to them, that's the taboo, right? That's the right. taboo. And they're you're basically saying, we're giving you the freedom not to watch a taboo, better yet, to make the taboo.
Right,
right. Right? And right. then they're like, oh. And then when you make it, by the way, you see the, you know, what makes the sausage and you're like,
right.
Oh, this isn't scary at all.
Right. And you're making your film and you've got to think like a producer and you've got to go, well, and you also have two audiences to please.
Right.
You have to please your peer group.
Right.
And you also have to please your parents.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you can't make a blood and gore, you know, you're not going to get sliced open.
Right.
And bleed all over the place and die because your parents aren't going to go for that.
Right.
So you've got these restrictions to deal with too.
Right.
So now you've got to figure out a way to please both audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting in going back to that teaching digital media literacy and
right.
teaching, you know, how do we speak to our audiences and how do we make this okay? How do we push the envelope and have a really good time with your friends,
right.
and at the same time pull it back to a place where you know you can watch this, and a parent is not gonna take this off limits for the very audience that you're trying to entertain.
Sure.
And I, you know, these are important lessons.
Right.
These are really important lessons, I think.
I think what's also interesting, and I think it's related back to the karate, is how. I think you're one of the only people that I know that's going to be able to pull this off because one of the hardest things,
<Thank you. laughs>
because one of the hardest things I think is getting kids' attentions and focus, right? And I see that every time I go to the dojo and I see these kids all ages. We're talking like they're going from like, you know, 8 to 14 or 15 and adults, right? On mm-hmm. Saturdays, there's adults there mm-hmm. too. Everyone's 100% paying attention for 2 hours straight, doing hard exercise. They're all having fun too, but they're focused.
Yeah. I had a good teacher.
Right.
I had good teachers when I was, I'm just doing what they did for me when I was a kid.
They're all paying attention. Yeah. Amazing. And but then after.
It's about belief. You have to believe in the kid. You can't talk at the kid.
Right.
You have to talk with them. You have
right.
to, you have to, you know what I mean?
Sure.
You have to believe in them.
Right.
And I have a tremendous belief in young people. You know, I have a tremendous belief and hope. You know, there's a lot on these generations' shoulders. This generation is going to have to face things. You know, these kids who are 7 and 8, 9, 10, they're going to be facing some really interesting problems. And I have every hope and I have a strong belief that they're going to do it. They're mm-hmm. going to do it. We're kind of leaving it to them to do.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's why it works the way it works is because, I mean, I do believe, I do have hope. I'm positive. The people who stepped in, to my life when I was a preteen and teenager, I was lucky. They were dynamic and they believed in me.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped me through, you know, a very difficult time, of my life. And mm-hmm. I give that back every day now, you know, I find it really, really, really fulfilling.
Right.
You know, I worked for a great theater, Freedom Theater in Philadelphia,
right.
Pennsylvania, in a professional acting program. And, you know, a lot of the kids that were in the program, they were kids who, you know, never encountered Shakespeare mm-hmm. or Shaw or, but there was a great thirst. And when we took all the mysticism around this language and around these stories, and we communicated the stories, you know, every one of these kids from this low-income neighborhood got it. They got it more than I got it.
Right.
And, you know, watching 10 kids from basically, you know, North Philadelphia ghetto.
Right.
Go to Juilliard, NYU, Columbia, UCLA, you know, watching them you know, go to Temple University's, you know, performance programs. You know, just was, you know, it was when I realized that it was more important for me to give away and empower people mm-hmm. and teach than it was to actually perform on a stage for me or yeah. perform in front of a camera. It was just, it was my thing.
Right.
And it's just been my thing, you know, whether I'm teaching karate or I'm teaching filmmaking or stop motion, it's just what I do. It's my thing.
I know. And I think I know something else that you do that's also extraordinarily important. You have a senpai program within the dojo, yeah. right? And the senpai, for those who don't know, is basically like a student teacher of some kind, right?
It's like a leadership
program. Leadership yeah. program. And you're giving leadership roles to people that are very young.
Yes.
Very young.
Yes.
Like you'll have an 11-year-old kid who's going to teach an adult karate.
Yeah.
I've yeah. seen it and it's impressive.
Yes. And they can do it.
And they can do it.
Right.
And so what this does, if you take your large classes, like your Saturday class, where you have all kinds, all mixed belts, all kinds of people in the same thing, everyone is looking to the next kid as a mentor or as a goal. And they keep looking up the ladder and they're like, it's all the way to you, but they're all looking at someone that they want to emulate. And I think that that's what's going on, is that these young kids, they're not just all like, well, whatever, well, let's just go play.
Right.
They're like, no, I want to be like that person. Like,
right.
I know my daughter looks at some of your
right.
teenage
They're 2 years older than her.
And they're yeah, like, I want to be that yes. girl.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And so that by doing that, you've basically created, it's actually, you've actually created a structure that can easily happen inside of a film studio, right?
Right.
I have to, I'm a grip. I listen to this person. I listen to the yep. DP. I listen yep. to that, like, you know, yep. who's yep. the assistant director, the director. You know everyone's roles in here and you're looking at that leadership.
Yeah. Now let's hope it works. It's an experiment at this point, but I am, that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
Right.
I'm trying to, the filmmaking dojo.
The filmmaking dojo, yeah. I think it's absolutely right. I've been trying to think about it. I was like, this is some really smart stuff that's going on, because I've noticed this in these, you know, who was it? You had a really big shot sensei came on.
Shion Mike Monaco.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a legend. Actually, yeah, he's a legend. He studied under the great Masayama and Soshu Oyama. Masayama's number two guy.
Mm-hmm.
Masayama started Kyokushin Karate.
Mm-hmm.
Shion Mike Monaco is, you know, he's in charge of all of North America, really all of the North American hemisphere now.
Right.
I mean like Canada, North America, South America. I mean, right. he's, you know, nicest guy in the world.
Super nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just knows karate and knows the real karate.
Right.
You know, but karate isn't about creating fighters. It's really about creating teachers.
Yeah, well, this is. I remember he was giving a lot of lecturing while he
that's
was there.
That's from him. Yeah, right. that's yeah.
And he was basically noting, it's like, you know, all these kids, and like they're all sitting there and says, "Oh, I'm waiting and patiently waiting." And he says, he looks at all the parents like, "This is pretty impressive that these kids are just completely 100% focused and paying attention, and they won't do anything until I tell them what to do." That's not common in kids today.
Right. Well, you know, it's not, because we don't teach attention as a skill.
Right.
We feel like attention is something that the brain either has or doesn't have. And if it doesn't have it, then we have to treat it with a pill.
Right.
And in Japan, it's completely different. In Russia, it's completely different. Attention is a skill and it can be taught and worked on. And that's really why karate is compulsory
right.
for, you know, kindergartners and preschoolers
right.
in these countries, because that's where you learn to that attention, you know, you train your attention, your
right.
ability to pay attention.
Right.
It's a muscle.
Right.
It's not a God-given gift. I mean, it is. I mean, some kids have it but some kids have to work on it.
You right.
know, I had to work on it.
Yep.
You know, and I still work on
it. I still have to work on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right on. You know.
So it's really kind of interesting to do that. But I believe this is a great program. I'm very excited about it. My daughter's 100% in. When she found out about it, she was like, we got to be like, she wants to be in this program.
Yeah,
so she's
very
excited.
I'm really excited about it too.
And my son wants to be in it too. So of course,
right. We're gonna pull him in. We're gonna get him in there.
I think he's a little young, but I think he can still do it.
Yeah, you know, I really kind of feel like, you know, we're gonna need. Younger actors, little brothers and stuff, you know, so we have a lot of little brothers, you know, mm-hmm. kind of hanging around with the people that are in the program right now. So so we'll pull them in as they're needed.
It's great. I think it's really exciting. So let's let people know, where can they find out more about this program and what can they do to help?
You can find out about the program at newvoicesacademy.com.
Okay.
You can call. Right. 310-508-8046.
Right.
That's the business number.
Right.
And sign up. Ask any question you want. You can talk to me directly.
Okay.
Robert Christoph.
Yeah.
You can email us.
Right.
Robert C at newvoicesacademy.
Okay.
.com. So look us up, please.
Yeah, great.
Please.
Great. So really exciting. And, you know, we're running the whole month of July. The month of July, right. You're thinking about going beyond that as well, right?
Yeah. What'll happen is that because we're doing horror, kid-friendly horror films, mm-hmm. what we're going to do is we'll really spend time. We're trying to produce them to the most professional quality that we can, just like it's an actual TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we want to do is kind of release them out on our platforms, on our website and mm-hmm. And whatnot, on Halloween.
Okay.
So we have a couple of events happening at the facility for Halloween that'll kind of jibe well.
Right.
So that'll take care of August and September, and then mm-hmm. October we'll start a whole new round.
Okay.
And that'll go all through the school year. And then we'll just turn around and do another camp next summer, and it'll be in a different genre.
Right. Well, that's great. That's great. Well, thanks so much, Robert.
You
this
bet.
Has been awesome.
Oh, it's really been great, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.